This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the inaugural December edition of Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. We're here each and every Saturday at this time. We're talking about the disease of addiction and the road to recovery. Recovery Radio is sponsored by Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. We'll have a lot more about Retreat straight ahead in the program. We've got a couple of guests today, because we have an interesting topic that we have touched upon in the past on the program, but I don't think we have really got into the weeds on it the way we hope to today. Sobriety, maintaining sobriety, first of all, achieving sobriety is a difficult enough task. Maintaining it takes a lot of work. There are difficulties in that. They are not insurmountable. Millions of people remain sober for a very long period of time. But there are unique circumstances that make maintaining sobriety during recovery more difficult for young people, particularly young people who are in either college or high school. And that's what we're going to take a look at today. Recovery, maintaining sobriety while in college. Two guests to that end to tell us how this functions. Our first is Nancy Marcus Newman, and a little later we'll be joined by Samantha Osterloff from Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. But what I want to welcome Nancy to the program. Nancy Myers Newman, lawyer, artist, and advocate for young people and their families who are dealing with the issues of substance abuse. Nancy, thanks so much for joining us on Recovery Radio.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Glad to be here.
So before we get into the particulars of your involvement in this topic, did I get it right? Are there unique circumstances surrounding sobriety and recovery if you're a young person in college?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, addressing that particular population and the special needs of that population is something that I've worked on now for a long time, both adolescents and young adults that are in college. You know, it's an abstinence-adverse environment to be in college. There is drinking, and even when colleges say, oh, no drinking on campus, or you know, there are rules and regulations. We all know the fact is that, you know, there is drinking on campus. And so how would a student maintain sobriety or, you know, maintain abstinence from drinking or using drugs in a place where it's, frankly, rampant is something that is a special area of sort of the recovery movement and recovery development of new systems for people.
And the other factor that sort of exacerbates the situation is, in addition to this sort of free fire zone you describe as college campus drinking, there is just the simple fact of the matter is that young people are engaged in reckless behavior because they're young. And
right,
that makes it even more difficult and tragic as circumstances. Incidentally, we are way beyond merely, I use that word advisedly, problem drinking on campuses. And I know you'll get into that when we talk about your work. You got involved in this through a foundation you formed called the Bridge Foundation. Tell us about that.
Indeed, I did. I formed the Bridge Foundation about 7 years ago. After being involved in trying to help young people that were struggling with substance use disorder and alcoholism, and back then, around 12 years ago, we had some of these issues in my own family with some family members, and young people back then had very few services and supports available. You know, now we recognize that this is a brain disease. And it is, you know, a diagnosis in you know, the DSM-V that, you know, substance use disorder is recognized as a mental health disorder. We've come a long way. But back then, you know, it was much more looked at as a moral failing and tons of stigma around it, which still exists. And so I formed the Bridge Foundation basically to support young people for whom current systems have failed. That is our mission statement. And we do a lot of work around funding, programming for young people in the community that are either in recovery from addiction and alcoholism, or that also, you know, young people who may be struggling with mental health issues. Sometimes this appears in an adolescent or a young adult as something that you can't quite put your finger on. You know, it doesn't show up the same way as it looks when somebody is an adult and has been drinking, and it's a progressive illness over a long period of time. With young people, a lot of times it may start with they're depressed, their grades are going down, we don't quite know what's happening, they're smoking a lot of pot, they're on the couch a lot. You know, but that's not addiction, that's normal, quote unquote. Kids are all using pot, all mm-hmm. drinking. And so where is the line of where, you know, a kid, I say a kid, but I'm saying, you know, anybody from age 13 to about 26 is really the population we serve. And what are the needs of those young people? What do they need in our community, a community-based, recovery-oriented system that will support them having a choice that's fun and exciting and something that will help to feed their passions and help their growth and help them to hang out and enjoy themselves without using substances, you know, in any way or needing to use them.
And absent that kind of support, which, as you say, was sorely lacking, it is interesting that the behavior you described can often be written off as just the normal behavior of young people trying to fit in or adjust or experiment. One of the things I know the Bridge was works on is not only the young people in crisis, but their families. What do you tell parents who are saying, how do I distinguish between your garden variety young people problems and something bigger?
Well, you know, it's interesting because that is how I came into this. And treating the family and supporting the family and educating the family is literally half of this. Half of it is helping the family, and the other half is helping the individual who's struggling with the disorder. And so it's a family disease. And oftentimes, you know, when parents, I'm going to talk about parents, it may also be siblings, it may be grandparents, but I'll just say parents for the sake of brevity, that, mm-hmm. you know, parents may not know, you know, what is the line where I need to get help for my kid or not. And ultimately, it ends up being the parent that is frustrated, worried, upset. You know, codependency is a disease that takes many, many years and much support from peers that have gone through it, other parents. And so there are supports for other parents who may be wondering. Al-Anon is certainly one of them, but that is not a, that's a 12-step program where there isn't really exchange during the meetings. That's like feedback. Mm-hmm. You would meet with people after the meetings for that. There is a very large parent support community. A couple of parents in this area, Pam and Bill Roberts, helped to start that many, many years ago when I was starting the Bridge Foundation. And since then, they have developed actually a plan, a model for how to create a parent support group within a community. Karen Foundation, the Bridge Foundation, has funded a replicable model through the Karen Foundation of how to, you know, set up a parent support program, an education program in any particular community. But in the Philadelphia area, in our local area, it exists and it's very, very strong. There's a Center for Families in Malvern. The woman, Kim Rubenstein, who runs Be a Part of the Conversation, has parent support programs out there and education programs. So what happens for the family now is thank goodness, there are many, many programs and meetings and opportunities for parents to dip their toe in the water, even if you don't have a kid who may be struggling. You know, this is an epidemic that is literally taking down an entire generation right now.
Yeah.
So whether your kid is struggling or not, it's something that you should know about. I guarantee every listener here knows somebody that is struggling with something having to do with this.
I've told people who want to know how at risk their children or their kids are that they're almost as at risk if this were an airborne, you know, communicable disease. Like the flu. That's how pervasive and how easily young people have been swept up in particularly the opioid problem. So tell us
There's no question. And we need an epidemiological approach to it. And if you think about that as the model, and I absolutely 100% agree with you, what would happen if this were an airborne illness is they would sequester the people that have it, right, in an environment where they could be healed from it so that it doesn't continue to spread.
Well, we certainly
creating those communities for healing is what the Haven's about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's creating communities where young people can come together and be in recovery, heal from addiction.
Well, let's talk about the Haven, because I know it was through your work with Bridge, the Bridge Foundation, that you found out about sort of a small national program that began on the West Coast called the Haven, which was campus centric. And decided that you wanted to get one underway on the East Coast in University City. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. I found out about one of the things that the Bridge Foundation does is we reach out and collaborate. And I'm a lawyer. I do a lot of research into what is sort of being done nationally and best practice models, new things, because that's what I would like to be funding through the Bridge. And I found out about this program, The Haven, where they were creating residential collegiate recovery communities on college campuses out in California, a lot more progressive than we are here on the East Coast. A lot of stuff's happening faster there. And so I actually, we met through a woman that I had worked with a Young People in Recovery, which is another nonprofit. And she introduced us, and I met Sharon Weber and Holly Sherman, the founders of it. And I said, you know, I'd love you to come out here and meet. And their community director, Jerry Ross, came out. And we had a meeting out here in Philadelphia. We walked around in University City. And we were like, let's do this. We need this here on the East Coast. I mean, there is another collegiate recovery community that started many years ago that's actually one of the beginning ones. And that's at Rutgers, the one in North Jersey. And that is basically run through the college and was, you know, born from the college.
Nancy, I want to hold you up there, Nancy. So I want to take the break here so we don't get too far behind. And when we come back, we'll pick up on what goes on at the Haven at Drexel. Our guest is Nancy Marcus Newman. She is joining us to talk about helping young people and their families who are struggling with substance abuse. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Nancy Marcus Newman is our guest. Nancy is a lawyer, she's an artist, and she has been an advocate for several years now for young people and their families struggling with substance abuse through her foundation that she founded called the Bridge Foundation. And as a result of that, now with The Haven at Drexel, which is a campus-based recovery sober living arrangement. So Nance, when you saw what was going on the West Coast, and you noticed there was nothing going on in a big college town like Philadelphia, you must have been shocked.
Yeah, I was shocked. And I mean, I knew that, you know, something had to happen. And when I saw The Haven, I was so excited. I was just like, this is it. We need to get this here. And so we brought together a team. Actually, two young people helped us to bring it together. One of them is now the head of Minding Your Mind, you know, which also helps with young people. So it's really a movement, and we came together, and I met with the development office at Drexel. So the Bridge Foundation established a small fund to support young people that needed some kind of, you know, any kind of recovery support at Drexel. And, you know, sometimes it just went to coffees or meetings or whatever, but we did establish that sort of base at Drexel. Drexel opened their doors, you know, welcomed us, and then The Haven went about, their team went about actually meeting with all of the systems at Drexel that would be referring students or meeting with students in recovery, their counseling department. And we found a beautiful house, and we began. And since then, I mean, it's been years now, but it's really turned into a hub for young people. As you may have read in the New York Times article recently, you know, it's students from all over the place, including even out on the main line. Students from Villanova may come to these meetings and gatherings that The Haven has. They have a Saturday night 12-step meeting, but all are welcome from all colleges and universities. And they have potluck, and they all meet, and it's a great way to spend a Saturday. This is just one example. There's many, many programs of gatherings that come through The Haven, but it's a great way to spend a Saturday night, you know, with other people without drinking.
Do any of these students actually live in the building you guys found?
Yes, it's a residential sober living house. We have about 10 students at a time. We have taken students from outside of Drexel University, although we are affiliated with Drexel, that, you know, that is part of our agreement that we can take students from other colleges and universities. And there, so they do live in that, in the house. They have meetings, the residents of the house, have meetings weekly. They have certain systems where, you know, they are responsible for taking care of the house, for cleaning, for shopping. Mm-hmm. It's all run basically like a family. They cook together, and there's also a psychologist who does meet with them regularly, so there is that kind of support.
So this is a campus-based sober living facility, correct?
Yes, it is. It is. And it's very different from, say, a sober dorm, which have existed for many times in college, for many years. Colleges and universities will say, oh, well, we have a sober dorm. But there's a difference between having a physical space that's designated as alcohol-free, where a lot of times you'll get the students who really just want to study and don't want to be bothered by parties. You know, it's different to have a physical space than it is to have a community developing, where the peers are coming together and creating their own community within the college community. So it's much more than a physical space.
Are there
in fact, many times it floats. You know, they have things outside of the house.
Are there resident counselors that live in the building with the students?
Or? Yeah, there are. They're not counselors. There are house managers.
Right.
And it's basically run the way sober living best practices are run all over the country, mm-hmm. where you will have a house manager who is usually somebody who's senior, who's sort of risen through the ranks of being in the house and understands how the house works. And that person is in charge, but it's still a peer. At The Haven, we do sometimes have somebody who is a house manager who's a little older, who's not a college student anymore. Most times it's been a graduate student.
Yeah.
And there's usually a male and a female. We have both women and men in the house. And you know, floors are separating them. And we also have, as I said, we have a program director, Bob Ackley, and he meets with the students regularly, both in terms of how is the house being run, as well as, you know, he is a counselor.
How do the students apply for a space at the house? How does that work?
They would call The Haven. They would call the Haven either at Drexel, or they would call, you know, the California number, which is right all over their, you know, Haven at College website, and say, I'm interested in coming. But a lot of times it's a referral. And the referral comes through, sometimes it will come to us from a treatment facility, a residential treatment facility, or it may come to us from an IOP.
We're going to have a representative from Retreat, who sponsored the program, to talk about how that process works with Retreat and other treatment facilities. Because, as you know, people who expect their loved ones or their children to leave a 28-day program and be okay are sadly mistaken. So a good treatment facility is always on the lookout for where what's next in this continuum of care. And that's
exactly
essentially what the Haven is, right?
You've got it. And I mean, so the key is, yeah, exactly. 30 days is a start, and it's a part of the continuum of care, inpatient treatment, as is intensive outpatient treatment. But, you know, especially for young people, I would say at least a year and a half, you know, is what I would recommend, you know, if it was my kid or somebody that I cared about, to really be within a very intensive support system, you know, for maintaining abstinence. And so we'll get referrals from, for example, you know, the Retreat or, you know, other treatment mm-hmm. centers. And we will also refer out. You know, we have students who come in and say they come to the potluck on Saturday, or somebody in, they meet somebody who's a resident there, and they say, you know what, I think I've been drinking too much. You know, maybe I have an issue. That sometimes we get young people on campus who say, you know what, I need help, and they go there. And you know, also, so you know, if it's not The Haven, we partner and collaborate with a number of different collegiate recovery programs. Now they have collegiate recovery programs that have been established on a lot of college campuses, whether or not they're residential. Many of them are not residential, like The Haven is, where you can actually live in the house. But there is one at Temple. There's one at St. Joe's. So, you know, they have popped up, but really The Haven was the first one. And so very proud of the work that we've done and helping to bring that to Philly.
You should be, because of, among the scary things about sending young people off to college is the notion that, you know, they're outside of your control and your watchful eye, and it can be a scary time. Nancy, we have to have you back on the show when we have a lot more time to talk about you, how you got involved in this, and the continuing work. Do you have a phone number for the Bridge Foundation if people want more information?
I do, actually. It is, we have an 800 number, and it's 1-800-4, the number 4, the Bridge. And so you could call that number anytime.
Okay.
And, you know, we also have a local number. Well, I'll give it to you. It's 844-484-3274. And that will put you directly, to somebody at the Bridge, and it forwards to me, actually.
Okay.
So if somebody has questions, this is a very tight operation. It's usually me and a handful of volunteers. So.
Nancy Marcus Newman, thanks so much, Nancy. And we'll have you back on real soon in the new year.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much for having me.
Terrific. When we come back, we'll talk to Samantha Osterloff of Retreat. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I want to thank Nancy Marcus Newman for joining us through her foundation, the Bridge Foundation, and her work at The Haven at Drexel. She's really shed a lot of light on a pretty scary thing for young people who are trying to maintain sobriety and stay in college. You want more information about The Haven at Drexel, you can check out the Drexel website, drexel.edu, and we thank Nancy Newman again for that. You know, the whole thing is sponsored by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, and I want to give you that phone number for the reason I give it to you every week. If you need a world-class treatment facility, then you could do no better than Retreat. But we give you the phone number for informational purposes. Any questions you may have about anything concerning the disease of addiction or the treatment you're receiving or want to receive, any questions at all, you can feel free to call Retreat, and they will answer your questions. 855-859-8808 is how you reach them. 855-859-8808. From Retreat, we have Samantha Osterloff with us again. Samantha has been on the program a couple of times. She is outreach manager for Retreat, and she joins us to talk about this continuum of care, which is so critical when dealing with the disease of addiction. Samantha, thanks. I know you're not feeling well, but I appreciate your time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
There you go. You sound a little better already. So as outreach manager, and I want to find out exactly what the nuts and bolts of that are, you are already familiar with The Haven at Drexel, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. For people who don't understand, there's a lot, as you know, there's a lot of myths and misconceptions about what goes into the recovering from this disease. It's not one thing. It's many things. It's not solved by one trip, into a facility and out, that it is, as I said earlier, a continuum of care. How does that work in your role as outreach manager, and what do you look for in places like The Haven?
So when we have a student come in who may have been struggling with substance abuse throughout their history of college, we certainly don't want to keep them from continuing their college education. We want to make sure that they're being provided the appropriate resources once they discharge. Because for a young person or an older person, whoever is actually, participating in a college program, it can be, you're right, very scary to immediately go back into the college environment with little to no support in your recovery. So what we look for when we have a student that is a college member and, wants to continue that academic career is we want to look for a program that, such as The Haven, that's going to provide that structured recovery residence for them, that extra structure that they may not have in a typical traditional dorm room setting. And including with that is also, like The Haven, is the ability to have that additional resource for them, for outpatient services, for additional mentorship, and even have that additional push of, you know, academic advisors and a college that's going to be supportive in their, not only their education, but their continued recovery. Because what we do see is that those who continue their recovery and have this additional support in the college setting actually really do really wonderfully and can even sometimes academically do better when they have that additional support and in working their recovery than they did, you know, whether they were they did before in their active use or even before maybe they picked up the drugs and alcohol. You know, they really do thrive in the college environment. But again, they need that additional support. And so that's what we're looking for when we have a student who we want to refer back to college, is we want to send them with all that additional support. We want to make sure they have that set up for them and that they know and they can feel that comfort that if they're struggling in their recovery, they don't have to be afraid or stigmatized just because they're a college student, you know, trying to get well and continue their education.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, what's really important is that, you know, right now we have a whole demographic and a whole, you know, group of individuals who are college age, who are suffering with substance abuse. And what I like to think about and provides me comfort when I'm setting them up, you know, a collegiate-based aftercare program, is that what's going to happen, you know, to that group of individuals that are struggling? You know, what's going to happen when we have such a large demographic struggling that isn't able to have that access to continue to grow in their education, in their profession, throughout their recovery?
You must see, first of all, it's shocking that it took an opioid catastrophe to create safe havens on campuses where, let's face it, reckless behavior with substances has been going on for a long time. I mean, certainly drinking is almost a major at some universities, but it's taken people literally dying for schools, colleges, and universities to go, you know, we've got to be doing more. You must have seen examples of people who have been through treatment at the retreat, for instance, who, faced with the prospect of going back to school, are completely freaked at the prospect of being in that environment again. Is that true?
And yeah, that's absolutely a scary place, because our thought isn't necessarily let's push them right back into school. And what's really great about a lot of these programs is they help you know, build their recovery and help slowly reintegrate them back into the community. And once that you go back to a school and there's actually a recovery community, there's, you know, other people your age who are struggling with the same thing and still trying to, you know, succeed academically, that can be extremely comforting. And what I've seen that's been really, really awesome is that by providing our patients education about the fact that these types of programs exist, can be life-changing for a student.
What should people look for when they're picking a college and they're in recovery? Are there certain questions they can ask or, you know, guideposts they can follow to find the right facility for them?
Absolutely. And I think that a key to it is if the client is willing and at a place where they feel as though they can share honestly about their previous struggles and about their desire to, you know, continue their recovery and reintegrate back into an academic lifestyle and being able to ask that college, you know, what type of services do you offer? You know, your student resource center, you know, can I come in there if I have an issue? Are you pinpointing groups of students who are in recovery? Do you have any 12-step meetings that are based on your campus or close by your campus? If I'm living, you know, in a dorm that's substance-free, you know, we see there is a difference between a substance-free dorm and a recovery dorm. Those dorms that are, you know, for people in recovery or the sober residences that are associated with a school, those recovery residents are more than just substance-free places. You know, those are places that are providing that additional structure, that additional check-in, and that's certainly something that a client's going to want to ask a prospective college, you know, what are you going to offer for me? Am I going to be a valued student regardless of, you know, being a member of a recovery program?
There is still, unfortunately, stigmas attached to substance abuse. Do you find that some students in recovery want to keep that hidden from, say, an admissions office, and is that a good idea?
I think that it really depends on the person and how comfortable they feel, because some people, you know, you get to a point where, you know, maybe you don't feel comfortable disclosing that. Maybe you feel like the admissions department, if you're just trying to get into school, maybe you feel like that admissions department is going to look negatively on your past experience if they do, you know, associate that stigma of, you know, substance abuse. And it really becomes up to the client as to whether or not, you know, they're going to want to disclose that. Because, of course, you know, we can't, you know, force people to disclose. But even providing that education to our clients that this is okay, you know, this is okay. Like, it's okay for you to be in recovery and want to further your education. So I really think a lot of it comes to do with providing clients that education and then advocacy. Because even if they discharge from retreat and they're not immediately ready for that step or to be honest about their, you know, steps into a recovery journey, at least they have that bit of hope that down the road, if they change their mind, that they're able to do that.
Samantha Osterloff is our guest. Samantha is outreach manager at Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. She's filling us in on what we keep referring to as the process of recovery. Recovery is not one thing. It is many things. And, of course, this is a disease that is not, in the strictest sense, cured, but managed. Samantha, it's particularly difficult, I think. It's difficult to maintain, to get sober and then maintain sobriety at probably any point in one's life. But it's particularly difficult when you're a young person and then a young person in college. When we had our earlier guest on, Nancy Newman, she referred to colleges as a place where the notion of sobriety has often not been valued. I mean, it's sort of a, I describe it as a anything goes kind of zone in college. Young people face unique circumstances trying to remain sober, don't they?
Absolutely. Because I think that we, so much of young people in recovery, you know, especially in the beginning, associate, you know, working in an active program of recovery as maybe not being a normal person, may not being like our peers. So I think it's important that when we reintegrate, that we have that support of the other peers that are like-minded, who are struggling with the same things we are, because that helps you to feel more comfortable and break the stigma that you may have about yourself, which is, you know, ever more important when you're reintegrating back into the, you know, academic scene.
Yeah, I think many people who have not experience this disease up close don't understand the isolating nature of it, how no matter what, how much information fills up the airways and newspapers and stuff about the scope of this disease, when it strikes you, you can feel you're the only one in this mess and there's no way out. So there's great strength in that kind of community. Samantha Osterloff is going to stay with us in the next segment as we continue talking about young people and their dealing with substance abuse. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. We're talking to Samantha Osterloff of Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. Samantha is outreach manager for Retreat. The topic today has been essentially focusing on students and recovery. It's a unique time in life. There's a lot of experimentation that go hand in hand with being a young person at school. A lot of reckless behavior, as we all know. Now, because of an opioid epidemic, that reckless behavior has led to real carnage across the country, but certainly on college campuses as well. There's a growing awareness of that, obviously, and that's one of the things we're talking about today with regard to safe spaces on campus where people, young people, trying to maintain sobriety while going to school can feel safe and get healthy. Samantha, in the final couple of minutes we have here now, two things, you know, what more needs to be done? What can young people do? Take an active role in this. But before you get to that, with regard to stigmatizing recovery on campus, in your experience, what is it like? Are these people looked at as damaged, weak, somehow separate? What's the sense on campus when people live openly in recovery?
I think that it's probably different on every campus. But I think that from my own personal journey and experience, I think that what a lot of people may think is, like you said in the segment prior, is that a lot of what we're seeing right now on the media you know, throughout social media outlets, is this negative connotation of a substance abuse user. We see a lot of publicized about the deaths and the dying and the carnage and the robbing, the cheating, the stealing, you know, all the things that we do when we're out there actively. And we're not seeing a lot as much about those that are recovering, you know, those that are actually getting out there in society and really making a difference regardless of their past. And I think that may be what someone sees, you know, when you're going through the admissions process. Okay, well, this person failed at this college and this college, or, you know, this person has had no experience in college. Oh, why haven't they? Mm-hmm. And I think that negative stigma may still be there with some people. Again, not everybody, but some people, that we are people who don't do a lot of good for society, that we may be people that are going to do harm. If we have a criminal past or even a negative personal past that may have not led us to legal issues, what kind of good are we really going to do on a college campus? But what I've seen is that those that are in recovery, like I mentioned previously, are really advocates for society and for the college campus, not just for people who are, you know, actively in a substance abuse disorder to help them get well in college, but we're also people who are going out, we're volunteering, and we're really seeing what we can give to our communities, to our college campuses. And that's what I would personally like to see more publicized is, yes, we are recovering people who may have had a dark past. However, here we are with a bright future, and we want to make change to the world and to society, and we want to help other people recover. We want to help educate people that may not be sure whether they have a substance abuse disorder, that there's help regardless.
Yeah, it takes an enormous amount of obviously hard work and courage to maintain sobriety. And that's, in my experience talking to people in long-term successful sobriety, they are highly motivated and high achievers. They do. If you can maintain sobriety, you can get other things done. I know you're involved in at St. Joe's. Is that it?
Absolutely.
Tell me what's going on at St. Joe's.
So St. Joe's is also a part, very active part of the movement taking place in Philadelphia to really raise awareness and provide additional supports to those in recovery that are on college campus or thinking about coming into the college campus. And so, you know, they're actively working right now to be able to have that type of recovery housing, to provide additional services, to provide additional trainings and support, and to provide mentorship. So what's really been fun and really awesome for me is to really share openly about my recovery journey and offer support and mentorship to any person coming in, you know, to St. Joe's or really any collegiate recovery program that may need that additional support to say, hey, you can do this. You know, I'm here for you. What kind of extra support do you need? If you're going through a situation, how can I help you, you know, get through that situation, you know, clean and sober, mm-hmm. and get onto the other side and still stay active in your program academic.
Do you see this this spirit of openness, cooperation, and help spreading beyond the recovery community? I mean, are there other people in your experience on campus, for instance, who are looking for stuff to do, right? And go, you know what, I think I'd like to help that, even though they're not, you know, abusing substances or recovering.
Absolutely. And what's really awesome, too, about a lot of the collegiate recovery programs that are, you know, currently active and really getting out there in this movement is that the services are open to everybody. So, you know, if they're having an event, for example, and they're going to have some pizza and maybe have a 12-step meeting or maybe just hang out as people in recovery, that's open to anybody. You know, it's just like it would in the 12-step fellowship. They're certainly not groups that are inclusive to only people that are in recovery. I know that, you know, at quite a few campuses, you know, maybe someone who, you know, maybe binge drinking or maybe they've been experimenting and maybe they're not sure whether or not they're really an addict or an alcoholic, they're still welcome to come hang out. You know, as long as they're, you know, obviously coming clean and sober and wanting to attend those events, that support and that friendship is there, whether they're, you know, active in recovery or maybe they're just thinking about it or maybe they're at a different stage of contemplation about whether or not they have a disease, it's open.
Yeah. Samantha, thanks for reminding us. You're right. It's the irony of the media attention to this disease that it got our attention because of the negative nature of the news, and that often obscures the fact that millions of people manage to get sober and stay successfully so. Thanks for reminding us. Samantha Osterloff, yeah. Outreach Manager for Retreat. Take care of that cold.
I have to, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Samantha.
You're welcome.
And thank you, everybody else. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and please look for Recovery Radio each Saturday at this time. Bye-bye.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.